with Stacey Bratzel and Daryl McIntyre on 630 CHED is brought to you by Abe's Door Service, where service is their specialty. Visit abesdoor.ca.
Since you've been gone, how come I never hear you say?
Okay, I'm going to start talking because Daryl loves this song. And this is a great song.
It is a great song. It's my girl. There we go. Move on.
All right.
I've never kissed my TV. Kelly Clarkson's been on. If you missed it earlier, folks, Stacey used to kiss the TV when Michael Jackson would come on TV.
Just that one part in the Beat It video. It was really close up on his...
I'm feeling uncomfortable now.
Well, is that just too soon? It was a while ago, 30 years ago.
Isn't it funny, though, you get to a certain age and you start thinking about either how much fun you had when you were a kid, or how cool you were as a kid, or how uncool you were as a kid in some of our examples. It's a great time for reflection. I think a lot of people reflect once you get to, well, whatever middle-aged is.
Yeah, what is middle-aged? I guess we're struggling for a definition because we want to know whether we fit into club or not.
I'm almost out of it.
Whether we're in it yet. Well, Midlife is the second anthology of stories written by people who have hit the center of their lives, depending on the definition of
we're
middle-aged.
In Midtown, baby.
We have Sarah Chan and Jen Pavliano joining us today. Sarah's in studio and Jen is in Vancouver. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So can we first have a definition of middle-aged? Is that a numerical...
State of mind.
State of mind, or yeah.
I think it's a little bit column A, a little bit column B. We called it middle-aged because it's 20 years since all of the contributors have worked together. We used to all work together at the Gateway newspaper in our, like, undergrad years, so, you know, very early 20s when we're still children. And then a lot of people who read the book, so this is, you know, making the assumption that we will live until we're 80-ish, which there is really no guarantee about anything in life.
Nope.
But a lot of people of all ages and stages have read Midlife and feel as though they identify with being middle-aged, because I don't think it's so much a technical age. It is a state of mind, like Daryl said, because everybody's always in between something.
It's any time after the beginning part. It's when you're hit the mushy middle where all of it's confusing. That's it.
When you stop kissing the TV, you're middle-aged, pretty much.
Yeah.
I suppose you could argue if you've had kids early, maybe it's the children moving off to...
Empty nesters.
Yeah, to post-secondary or to jobs or whatever. Maybe it's that stage. But I guess it does... But what does it matter? Why is it such an important time in our life? And why does it deserve a full book with a whole bunch of stories from a bunch of people to help take us through?
I think the interesting thing is, why is it important? And I don't know if I would say why is it important. I don't think a lot of people write about middle age because when you're in the middle of things, you don't have a lot of time. When you're middle of raising kids, dealing with aging parents, trying to pay for your home and doing all this big life stuff that you were told that you need to do, you know, when you're a grown-up and you're adulting properly. But I think the important thing about reflecting on middle age is because you're not alone. So, you know, you go through this giant swath of your life when you're accomplishing all these huge things and trying to navigate all these complex emotions and just structural things you have to deal with. And nobody talks about it.
You guys have all sort of put in stories, so I'm curious, Jen, the element that you put into this anthology, where did it come from? What's your story?
I live in Vancouver, and as you may know, we have had a housing issues for a very long time.
Yeah.
And one of the big themes in this book is actually about housing at home, partly because that particular issue has affected all of us in a very different way than I think previous generations. My story was really about coming to terms with the Vancouver housing market. It's been, you know, decades of sort of housing turmoil around here. And it really starts to be a reflection on, like, what is enough to have in your life? Like, what is actually enough? Does it mean that you have to buy a home? What is it that you actually need in your life when you look back on it. Does it really matter that it was an own or a rental? Or is it what matters is that you have your family, you have the, you're in the place you want to be, you're doing the things you want to do. And also match that with a whole bunch of stuff around like other things that I kind of came to terms with, such as I thought I would have a forever pen. I bought like a pencil when I was in my early 20s. I thought it was the most amazing pencil I've ever had. So I bought like 25 of them and then forgot about them completely and found them later on. I was like, right, I thought I knew what I was doing. But you don't. You really don't.
Yeah, you wing it.
I don't think we know what we're doing at any age. And but you know what? You just described the short story that you wrote, and talked about that. But you know, people of different generations can relate to everything you just said.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Right. It's so, there's something about it that's timeless, but the details are so specific to our generation. But yeah, like what we're feeling has been, it echoes for everybody. And we do have found that people have really said that whether you're younger or older, that these stories have themes that have resonated for people.
This is the second book, Midlife, so volume two, if you will. And the first one was created during COVID. And Sarah, your life had changed from volume one and volume two, hasn't it?
Oh, hugely, yeah. I think you're leading into what I wrote about.
You mm-hmm. bet.
Yeah, which is a story about being a single mom. I have, sadly, not an original story. But being a single mom and navigating what life looks like, taking care of my family, how to best serve my kids, and how to find the reserves within, and reflecting on, I mean, it's a luxury, actually, to be in a place where you can even reflect on what you're doing or how you're choosing to parent or how you're choosing to show up in the world. Because I think for in the single mom life or in any stage of your life, you're just kind of doing the best you can in any given moment, right? So it's about navigating what next life looks like. And my piece is particularly about parenting.
You can't focus purely on the parenting thing without understanding how you end up getting there, though, too, right? Uh-huh. And the emotional trauma that you end up going through personally while you're still trying to do all the things you need to do.
Oh, yeah. When you invest, like, 14 years, I guess, no, sorry, that was just the political life was 14 years. I was married for longer than that.
You brought it up.
Do it.
So, obviously, you were married to former mayor Dawn Iveson, mm-hmm. right? So we'll just put that out there because you mentioned political life.
Yes. Yeah. No, former, it's juicy and people like it. So, yeah, we can do another show on that. Former mayor's wife, my former marriage. And so it was, I mean, I think divorce is difficult under any circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's like person divorce, work divorce, friend divorce. It can all be tough.
Put a spotlight on it.
Whew. Oh, it's
you know,
not
it,
nice.
But it's really like a trial by fire because you realize, well, I realized, the noise doesn't matter, right? You're like, there's even more of an impetus, especially since I have kids. I think if I didn't have children, I might have been a little messier. Hmm. But they were really inspiring to me because it forced me to hone in on knowing myself, which I think I already do, actually. And it was just sort of like, I don't really have time to listen to all of this other noise of other people's stuff. That's not even my stuff.
And plus, you have kids that you need to focus on and take care of instead of letting yourself be taken away by the torrent.
Oh, yeah. And it's really overrated to be like, oh, lead by example. But that is the thing, too. Like, your kids are watching you go through this. And like I said, it's a luxury to even, you know, be in a place where you can think about this. But the kids are watching you go through this. And it really occurred to me, and actually this comes up with how I dealt with the situation in the story I wrote. But what do I want them taking away from this experience? Like, when they tell the story about their single mom or, like, their newly divorced mom, you know, after their dad left them, like in 20 years or when they're midlife, what's the kind of story I want them to tell about me? And so, yeah, it's been really motivating and empowering.
It's a relatable story of Absolutely. You on a ski hill and you're trying, your kids are suffering from different things at the same time and you're just trying to keep it all together and you're the only one there. And I read that, I'm like, that resembles me. That, you know, I feel you.
all hell broke loose, but I handled it.
Yes, you did.
I can handle hell. That's the line. Tell you what, why don't we take a quick break? We're going to come back here with Sarah Chan and Jen Pobolano and talk more about the midlife book. And where some of the other stories, there's alarms going off all over the place. We'll figure out where those are. A whole bunch of other stories as well, so we'll talk about that in a flash.
Last week she told me a story about free milk and a cow, and said no hooky dokies, and I get a wet bow. My honey, my baby, don't put my love upon no shelf. She said don't hand me no lines and keep your hands to yourself.
This morning with Stacey Brotzel and Daryl McIntyre on 630 CHED, presented by Abe's Door Service, with 24/7 emergency service where you speak to an actual person. Visit abesdoor.ca.
All the alarms are off now, so yeah. We're good to go. Chatting this morning, Sarah Chan is in studio with us. Jen Pobolano is on the phone in Vancouver. You guys, I guess you both worked on this. Jen, you're listed as the publisher, or I'm not sure how the titles work, but you still had to wrangle a whole bunch of people. How did you figure out who was going to write and what about, so that the different stories would I guess complement and not just pile on in one area?
There's a story coming. You can tell by the laughter.
You make it sound like that was intentional and easy. It was not. This one was a bit of a challenge. We did give everybody a theme to try to write around. And it sort of ended up, we started with the idea of housing and home, but it was very clear that a lot of people, like, it really resonated. They had, like, a story to tell. And then some folks were like, I don't know what to do with this. So we ended up having, like, quite a bit of a protracted development period where we had folks, do writing sprints afterwards and come up with work towards ideas that worked for them. And that, overall, the entire process took 18 months in the end to write the book. And our first book took 4 months. So this felt very long for us. But we know that in traditional publishing, this is very short for everybody.
And that was because of COVID, right? Because everyone was sitting around just waiting for
something
to do. Yeah,
precisely.
So this book, what do you hope people do with it? Because it's a beautiful book. It almost looks like a very elaborate coffee table book.
Yeah, that was on purpose. Jen, do you want to tell them about your vision when we were designing?
When we designed the book, we were like, we want it to be like a beautiful book that you a rich person would have in their mahogany library. So that it was not only something that had really meaningful things in it, but it was like beautiful and you'd want it to have in your home, because you know what I mean? So many books, they don't look like this anymore, and hardly anyone would put that effort in. And since we were able to control the entire production process, we're like, let's make it look amazing. So it's so tactile. It's beautiful. It's got the silver foil image. It's blue. And it's wonderful to hold. It feels really substantial. What people, we hope that they get out of it is that they read the stories, they reflect, there's a little bit of resonance in their own lives. Because, as you definitely know, the media is not what it was way back when. Like, I remember reading the Edmonton Journal when I was growing up, and, there'd be a giant life section, it'd be really packed. You'd get stories like this from other people hitting this kind of life stage. And that doesn't exactly exist for our ages these days. And I know that the advent of social media and everything makes it seem like it does, but it actually, to me, it just means we get a lot of American stories. I'm like, I get a lot of American long reads about midlife, stuff about like healthcare and mat leave being really short. I'm like, that's not our challenges. It's not Canadian. And so we're hoping that people who reach midlife in Canada, who are in this sort of mushy middle stage, read these stories from a multitude of different types of Canadians and feel a little bit less alone in their lives as they wander through.
It feels, it's not a how-to book. It's a how are you doing it? And how do you feel? And you're not alone.
Like
book.
A Me Too book.
Me Too book.
Yeah,
sort of, yeah.
Oh, except not too. That kind of a
not
Me Too.
No, not that kind of
different
Me Too.
No.
Yeah.
A same book.
Is that what the intent was? Just to know that people aren't alone, that everybody's going through something one way or the other, either in a, are these positive stories?
Yes.
Or are these, how are we struggling through mid-age stories?
Both. I think, because the original concept was for us to just come together and write as friends again. It was always intended as a gift to each other. There's 27 of us, and you know, we didn't really care if other people were going to like it. We knew that we would like it. And it turns out that a lot of people do like it, which is great. And you realize that it's not, are you doing it right? Is you doing it wrong? Is there one way to do whatever it is you're trying to do? Everyone's just trying their best, and they speak about it beautifully.
You must have had some pretty good reaction because there's a volume two. So you must have had a lot of people say, I like the first one. And this sort of, whether it entertained you or it affected you somehow.
Two things. We sold out immediately with the first one, and then we had to reprint it. So there was that, and that was kind of a surprise because we were like, oh my gosh, people like us. That's nice. And then for the second one, once we started writing, most of our writers realized that they had more to say. And that's why there's a second one, because it was like kind of just opening, you know, the door, and then there was a lot more behind there. So if you get both, actually, you'll see the same writers do slightly different things, even different style. It's really fascinating to watch your friends and your writers develop like that, even though we're like, quote, old now.
just go with older.
We've got depth and variety, and I think that's what we also want our readers to realize, is that no matter what your age or stage, there's always more there. There's always something new you can learn. There's something a new adventure for you to take after whatever it is that you did, and you're not alone.
Enough for volume three?
Oh my God, no.
Oh, she says that now, but
she
just
says
give
that
it
now.
Give it a month. When do you guys make it so this makes a ton of money and you have to split it 27 ways and decide whether to go?
We actually donate a dollar from every sale to the Edmonton Community Foundation for refugee students in post-secondary for like a scholarship fund, because we all realize how privileged we were to have met in that kind of context way back when. And so, there's actually a philanthropic arm to this project, too.
Love it. All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Can we tell you about the website, just midlifebook.ca, if people are interested in finding it?
I think you just did.
And you get the book
great
at Audrey's or Glass Bookshop.
There you go.
Thank you so much. We've got Sarah Chan in here with us, one of the contributors of Midlife and the publisher, and also a contributor of Midlife, Jen Pabliano. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.